I'm someone who loves trying out different makeup looks, but doesn't really wear much on a daily basis, so I like to focus on making sure I have high quality staples. And whether you like a fresh face, full glam, or somewhere in between, you've probably seen Thrive Cosmetics Viral Tubing Mascara. I've certainly seen it everywhere. You know, the one in the turquoise tube? So that mascara, along with all of Thrive Cosmetics' beauty products, are certified 100% vegan and cruelty-free, which I look for in makeup, and they've got excellent quality to match. And something I didn't know from all the mascara videos I've seen is that for every product sold, Thrive Cosmetics donates either that same product, another product that is needed more, or a monetary donation. They've worked with over 500 nonprofits to help with a wide range of causes like supporting cancer survivors, people experiencing homelessness, education access, and so much more. Knowing that makes me feel even better about using their products. And I do enjoy using them. Like I said, I like having high quality staples, and so my favorites are products that are multi-purpose, like the Brilliant Eye Brightener. It comes in a bunch of colors, and I like using them as eyeliner, eyeshadow, and even highlighter. Thrive Cosmetics is luxury beauty that gives back. Right now, you can get an exclusive 20% off your first order at thrivecosmetics.com/thrive. That's Thrive Cosmetics, CAUSEMETICS, .com/thrive for 20% off your first order. You can shop from anywhere doing pretty much anything. You might shop while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast. And however you shop, we all know and love the thrill of the hunt. But do you also know how to get the thrill of the best deals? Because Rakuten shoppers do. With Rakuten, they get the deals they love with the most savings and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Sephora, Nike, and even Expedia if you're looking to get some travel in. And getting cash back doesn't mean you have to miss out on sales, because those can just be stacked right on top. It's easy to use and based on a simple idea. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back through PayPal or check. Download the free Rakuten app and never miss a deal. Or go to Rakuten.com to start getting the most bang for your buck. That's Rakuten.
Hi, I'm Chanti.
And I'm Lynx, and you're listening to Muses.
Enjoy the show. Hey everyone, this week we had the great pleasure of joining our friends Ashley and Maggie over at Rock Candy. Rock Candy is a weekly sweet treat of stories from the world of music, album reviews, band drama, and discussions on some of the best tunes that were ever written. With Ashley and Maggie, you'll not only be learning a lot, but laughing and having a blast while doing so. And if you're like us, having a couple of beers.
That's right. This was a long time coming. We've been not only fans, but friends for years now, and it was finally the perfect time to crack some beers and discuss some of our favorite songs. In this episode, you'll hear the backstory behind 12 different ones. Also included are beer breaks, hot takes, and lots of jabs at Adam Duritz of the Counting Crows. It's a good time had by all, with more tidbits and info than you could have imagined.
Now, if you liked this episode, then you're going to love what Maggie and Ashley are doing over at Rock Candy. So make sure to go over and subscribe to their podcast as well. So that's Rock Candy. Enjoy the show.
I love this remix.
Yep. No. I mean, that's what I do. I mean, we all do that, right? We all walk around our apartments and our houses and like just make up songs to our pets, right?
Yes.
Absolutely.
100%.
Okay.
I love that. All right.
Are we good?
I think we're good.
We should start this.
I mean, we are starting.
We're started.
We already started.
Okay.
I mean, technically, we're already going.
All right. We're already going.
Keep it all in.
All right. Well, welcome to Rock Candy.
Oh, you're flipping the script.
I am.
Yeah.
Oh, because you usually say it.
Yeah. My God. Yes. Welcome to Rock Candy. What Ashley said. Your weekly podcast, bringing you sweet treats from the world of music every week. and got an extra special episode.
Soup special.
Soup special. I'm your host, Maggie.
It's the soup special.
Oh my God. I could eat some soup. No, it's too nice for soup. I'm Maggie.
I'm Ashley.
And we have special guests.
Woohoo! Yay.
Please introduce yourselves. Hello. It is the Ladies of the Muses podcast.
Hi, it's us, the Ladies from the Muses podcast.
We are so excited.
I'm lady number one.
Lady number one, what is your name?
We really are.
Screechy lady number one, please tell us about yourself.
Well, my name is Chantel. I am a co-host of music. I love romantic dinners.
Ooh.
Long walks on the beach. Yeah. And love talking about 70s dad rock.
Oh my God.
Don't we all though?
God, I can't wait to get on a pontoon boat and just listen to any
all the yacht rock.
Any and all yacht rock.
Mm-hmm.
And I am Lynx. I am the other half of Muses podcast. I also love long walks on the beach.
That's how you guys got together, is your mutual love for long walks on the beach.
We were both walking from each side of the beach and we just slowly walked toward each other and saw each other in a distance. And
you were like, want to make a podcast?
Yeah.
Woman seeking woman to create podcast.
We've been together ever since.
Aww. That's so sweet. Yeah, you guys have been together longer than us, even like 4 years, right?
Yeah.
It'll
be
5 years this fall.
Holy shit.
Wowie, wow, wow. That's awesome. Yeah, and tell us a little bit about Muses podcast.
Well, we are a podcast. We talk about all about the women in rock and roll, from wives, groupies, girlfriends, to journalists, PR women, all women in the industry, and women on the stage as well. We kind of cover everything, women in rock.
Yeah, super inspiring women who have made a huge contribution in rock and roll history and may not have always gotten credit for it. We like to shine the spotlight on them.
Good. Somebody has to.
Yeah, seriously. I mean, honestly, and you guys have had some amazing episodes from like the Pat Benatar to Patti Smith are like two of my favorites. I love those ones.
Yeah. We've done a lot of fun interviews as well. Yeah. We've interviewed Maureen Van Zandt and Linda Ramone, Pamela DeBar. So yeah, it's a combination between like reading biographies, autobiographies, and almost presenting them like a book report and having a conversation about them, and then reaching out to the women themselves and then having great conversations with the inspiring women.
Yeah, you guys get some interesting stories that no one is going to get from like the musician himself, pretty much.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
yeah.
You'll get
the women
exactly to
be like, that's exactly why these women's stories are so important too, because it's a perspective that most people have not heard yet, right?
Oh yeah.
And possibly just stories in general that people haven't heard yet because the people they were dating or married to were too drunk or fucked up to remember them.
Oh, I remember that. You were drunk for a week, but I remember that.
I remember.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, I think that these women were probably much better at keeping journals.
Yeah.
Maybe a little bit more like on this day, this happened, we went here, as opposed to maybe the musician, like, of course, they'd have a journal where they'd write out their lyrics and things like that. But I think more often of the time, it was women keeping these really detailed diaries that later they got to go, what am I going to do with all of these things? And then it becomes a really cathartic experience for them to put their stories out there.
Yeah. They kind of end up being historians as well.
They're like the rock and roll bookkeepers.
Yeah.
What's going on? They have all the deets behind the scenes.
Again, they were sober for that week. Unfortunately. Or fortunately, I don't know. Speaking of sober, really quick, I would like to shout out the beer I'm drinking.
Oh yeah, that's right.
The beer that you got me. It is from Mean Max, local hero.
Local hero,
local brewer. But it's called Never Say Never, and it's a sour ale with raspberry. It's tart and delicious, and exactly what I wanted.
Oh, good.
On a nice spring day. It's lovely. Thank you for getting me a beer when I was like, I need a sour. And also, are you ready to play 6 degrees of beer?
Oh boy.
Never Say Never.
Oh, okay. So my thought on this was Never Say Never is very close to Goonies Never Say Die. And Cyndi Lauper did the theme to the Goonies. So technically the Goonies were her muse for that song, I guess. I don't know.
Oh, I like that.
I'm pretty sure that she wrote and recorded that song before Goonies came out. It's called Goonies Are Good Enough. So
her muse. So
there we go.
Yeah. 6 degrees of beer. You're welcome. I mean, I was just going to say, because
hold that one out of my ass.
Because women never say never.
Okay.
Right? I don't know. I was trying to be very woman inspired. Happy Ladies Month. We're talking about muses today, in case y'all didn't get that from the title or anything that we've talked about thus far. We're very, as you can tell, we're very professional. Don't know why we're not bigger, except in Switzerland. Anyway,
you know,
Switzerland.
Shout out to Switzerland.
Again, we're going to shout you out every week, Switzerland.
They like us.
They do. But
Lynx, are you drinking a beer?
Yeah. What are you? I saw you were sipping on something.
I forgot to bring a beer. I have beer in my fridge. It's just out there.
Can we take a pause? I think I didn't know we were allowed to drink this early.
You can drink whenever you want. Oh,
I honestly didn't drink a beer, or I didn't bring a beer to the party because I was like, is it a little early? Is it too much?
We started
out. You know who you're talking to, right?
I know. Right. I mean, we're idiots. No, my beer fridge, luckily, is just behind this wall here. There's a beer fridge.
I will be right back.
Sharing a beer wall with my wall. We'll be right back.
Okay.
Do you think you guys will be able to find something to talk about between the two of you while we're gone?
We might.
I might just insert like some beer music. Some
beer.
So good.
Is that a very Canadian beer?
Yep.
I was actually going to ask. Maple leaf on it, right?
It's. I was going to ask you guys if you have this beer.
We do. Oh, that's Molson. Oh, we do.
It's Labatt Blue.
Oh, it's Labatt Blue. I'm so confused.
If you were to go to Quebec, it would be Labatt Bleu.
Oh,
don't try to make Labatt Blue fancy.
The U and the E switch places.
Oh my God.
Wait. That is adorable.
The can, the E and the U, are in different places. That's
it's bleu.
Kind of
amazing. Because blue in French is bleu. Bleu.
What did you grab, Lynx?
I grabbed this very lovely, it's Ace Hill. It's a local brewery as well. And it's
pretty.
It is. It's raspberry. It tastes just like raspberries. It's the most delicious thing.
Sounds amazing. We have a theme going.
Raspberries.
Yeah. After you said that, I was like, I need either sour or this. And I had one. So
nice. You know. That looks delicious. Well, cheers.
Yeah.
Cheers, ladies.
Cheers.
Thanks for being on our show.
Hell yeah. Yeah, so we will get started then. We are doing a playlist episode to celebrate women.
Best songs about muses.
Yes, best songs about muses. Mostly women, but not always women.
Not always women.
So that's very exciting. Right. We'll do our typical round robin style.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess I will just go first, balls deep, with my first pick, which is, is a fun one. It's my apparent namesake.
Been waiting to play this song on this show for so long.
Rod Stewart's Maggie May.
I know I keep you amused, but I feel I'm being used. Oh, Maggie, I couldn't have tried anymore. You led me away from home just to save you from being alone. You stole my heart, and that's what really hurts. The morning sun, when it's in your face, really shows your age.
Damn, Rod, you gotta come in there with the ageism. So apparently, my mother told me when I was younger that I was named after Maggie May, which, first of all, Maggie is not my real name. Maggie is my nickname. Margaret is my real name.
Right.
Secondly, thanks. When I'm old, if I want to be a Margaret, I can be a Margaret. If I'm like, I'm sick of Maggie.
Call me Margaret.
I have options now. But like, I also think my mom was full of shit because, first of all, I think she was convinced I was going to be a boy because it was like dead set on Robert. And then like I was a girl and I think she's like, fuck. Margaret?
Sure.
Or potentially was also going to be Charlotte. And I was like, no.
Oh.
I'm glad. I don't think I make
You're
a
not
good
a Charlotte.
Charlotte. No. I'm not a good Charlotte. You're welcome. But I also
My mom was gonna call me Andreanna. And apparently she wrote it over and over and over again, like in a notebook. Andreanna. And then I popped out and she was like, Chantel.
I love like when parents was like, nah, fuck okay. it. You know what I thought? Nah, I changed my mind.
My mother wanted to name me Angelica.
Oh.
And my dad wanted Lynx.
I can see that, but Lynx is way better.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm glad. I'm glad your dad, you know, pushed her in that direction.
Yeah.
But it's like, hi, I'm Shanti and I'm Lynx and this is Muses. Imagine it was like, hi, I'm Andreanna and I'm Angelica.
Oh my God.
And we're in the Babysitter's Club.
It would have been a very different podcast.
Yeah, it really would.
Oh my God, that's too funny. But also I feel like if my mom knew the story behind Maggie Mae, she would not have named me Margaret. Maybe. I don't know.
Well, what is the story behind Maggie Mae?
This song was written about Rod's regrets about losing his virginity to an unknown woman at the Beaulieu Jazz Festival. I don't know if I said that right. I'm so sorry. It was back in 1961. Hot. It was like, you know, his first, he was like 16 and he's like, I'm going to live my best life and go to this jazz festival. And it was like Woodstock for jazz and everybody's sleeping in tents.
Cause you know, it gets everybody hot and bothered for a 16-year-old
jazz. But he apparently, you know, it's tents everywhere. He meets this older woman. He's like assumed she was in her 30s, I guess. And she took him back to her tent and had her way with him. And then he was kind of like, I don't know if I should have done that. But like, I don't know. You're 16 and you're horny. Like, live
what are
your
you
best life.
Do?
I don't know. But that's also why I think he like throws in the little quips about like, man, I didn't know how old you were until the morning I woke up. And I was like, whoa, you're 30.
Shots fired. Jesus.
It's a really weird feeling that I have about it because I'm like, yo, you should not be sleeping with a 16-year-old if you're 30.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was driving with TJ today and we were listening to on Sundays there's this like Rick Ashby's is that his name, like only play songs between 1955 and 1975.
Yeah.
So it's oldies, and so the song comes on and it's "You're 16, you're beautiful and you're mine."
No,
and TJ
no.
and I looked at each other and we're like, oh no. And we were like changing the lyrics to like
not be horrifying.
Gonna get in trouble.
But it's funny because he does not remember the name of the woman that he slept with.
Mm-hmm.
Surprise, surprise. So he named the song at Maggie Mae after a classic Liverpudlian song.
No.
I made it come. It's coming back, Liverpudlian. It's making a comeback.
I love that word.
I know. So it's the best word. But yeah, it's a song about a prostitute. And the lyrics go on about dirty, no good Robin Maggie Mae being picked up by a sailor for adult relations. And then he wakes up and he finds that she stole all of his money and his clothes. So she gets arrested and goes to Australia, aka British jail.
Oh my God.
Yeah. So, I don't know how I feel about this song anymore.
So he takes a song about losing his virginity, which granted, she probably shouldn't have slept with a 16-year-old, mm-hmm. but we don't know if he told her, hey, I'm 20. Who knows? Yeah.
Or they were all very drunk and just didn't give a shit.
But then he turns it around and makes it about a prostitute. So is he equating her to a prostitute?
Maybe.
A little bit.
Rod Stewart.
And also it's kind of funny coming from Rod Stewart.
Mm.
Mm. He wasn't well known for his, not sexualizing of women.
Yeah.
But what I really like about this is it became very popular during the skiffle craze of the 1950s. And it was a staple in the Quarrymen's repertoire.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And when they became the Beatles, they have an extract of that skiffle version at the end of the A-side for Let It Be.
Huh.
Wow. I had no idea that they covered that.
That's how old is this song?
It's like 1800s. It's like an old school, like Liverpudlian kind of like on the docks song that the workers would sing.
Wait, Maggie May is?
The prostitute Maggie May one, not the older woman I slept with Maggie May.
Oh, okay. They're both called confused.
Maggie May. It's not, none of this makes sense. It's
okay. Fine. The folk version that he was inspired by.
Okay, gotcha.
Inspired by.
For a hot second, I thought that Maggie May, the Rod Stewart song, was on the end of a Beatles album. And I was like, wait, nope. Rework those.
No, yeah, because this came out in the 70s. There's no way that could happen.
Right.
Timelines.
Now I get
it. Did I ever tell you guys that I went to Liverpool?
No. How was it?
Yeah. Yeah. It was fucking awesome. I spent a week there. I hung out with people that litter. I met like some real Liverpudlians, and we went out and I went to the Beatles exhibition, and
oh, cool.
I during the last part of it, while my Liverpudlian lover held me tight, it was the best.
This is honestly the best ever.
No, I believe
die
it. Happy.
Liverpool sounds like a rad place to visit. I would love to go.
It was awesome. It seemed like a rad place to live.
Yeah,
I bet. Oh, all right. So we can move on to Ashley's first pick.
Oh, which is a classic love song at this point. Something by the Beatles.
I don't want to leave her now. You know I believe in how. Somewhere in her smile.
My favorite thing about this video is how, like, Maureen just looks like she hates Ringo. Like, fucking Ringo.
Oh.
They were going through a lot at that time, I feel like.
Pretty much everybody except for, like, no, actually, it was just Ringo. Ringo was having a very hard time in his relationship at that point. The rest of the other guys were, like, in the honeymoon phases of their relationships.
I don't know if George and Patty really were. But
when he wrote it, I guess. But yeah, but I guess
yeah, when he wrote it. But then, like, hilariously and pretty ridiculously, as time went on, he like kept doubling down on how the song was not about Patty. And it's like, no, it should be about Patty, dude. Yeah. Like, why can't you just say it's about your fucking wife? So he wrote it in like it came out on Abbey Road in 1969, and of course, it has one of the most recognizable and beautiful guitar riffs that he has ever written, but also has become kind of like a standard in love songs because, and I love the lyrics because it starts off really great with there's like something in the way that she moves, which is totally ripped off of a James Taylor song, by the way.
Oh,
he ripped it off of a James Taylor song. But the lyrics continue to basically say, I cannot describe what it is about this person that I really love, so I'm just not gonna.
It's something, okay?
And it's just something, all right? I don't know. I just need lyrics for this song and whatever. So, like, it just kills me that he went from saying it was about Patty to then saying it was about the Hindu deity Krishna. Because, of course, George would say that.
Yeah. And then hari.
Exactly. And then eventually he just ended up saying that it was actually, he was thinking about Ray Charles when he wrote it. And I'm like, well, why can't you just say it's about Patty?
No, I'm real mad at it right now. I'm not going to say it's about Patty.
You can't just give it to her. Just give it to her.
You've given it to her before. Why can't she give it to her now? She's a babe. You know what?
Yeah.
It makes it a better song, too. It's like, don't you understand that your audience connects to it because of that? Like, right. Why are you trying to take that away?
And honestly, I feel like as soon as you say, well, I wrote it about this Hindu deity, a whole lot of people are going to be like, well, I can't really relate to that.
Yeah.
So like, good for you. It's cool.
But that's like our wedding song. So, I'm going to say it was about Patty.
But apparently that was like not an original video that they authorized to make. Somebody randomly made that particular video that we just played, the one that everybody associates with this song, with the couples just walking around on their respective estates and stuff. But somebody apparently did that randomly like years later, and then it ended up on like YouTube and stuff.
I love that and
like George was just not happy about it. He's like, this is a stupid video, and I don't like that people associate the song with it.
The video does not have a lovely structure.
It makes sense. I mean, videos didn't exist there. It wasn't like MTV was a thing. So yeah, anytime they made a music video, it wasn't technically that. It was just like,
yeah, it was just like
promo clip or something. Yeah.
But yeah. I 100% double down that it is about Patty. And absolutely, she looks fantastic in that video.
Oh my God. Abraham Lincoln for president.
Absolutely.
God. Yeah. The Boyd sisters.
Jenny too.
Yeah, we interviewed Patty's sister Jenny.
That's right. Oh my God, that was a good one.
So if you want to hear it from the mouth of the babe, yes, head over
the babe with the power.
Listen to our episode. Yeah,
the power of who?
Who? Jenny Boyd.
You do. Do what?
The power of
remind me of the babe.
Yeah.
Okay.
Wow. Okay. Do that. No, man. Now I regret. Spoilers. I regret not picking a Bowie song. Yeah. I just want to listen to Bowie. But we've got some classic dad rock coming up here with Shanti's first pick. If you want to intro it, my dear.
Yeah. So I know that it was like, let's all pick a song inspired by like a woman, you know, International Women's Month. But for some reason, I decided to say no.
You're not the only one.
She's a rebel.
Yeah.
That would be expected of me. That would be too on brand. So why take two idiotic bands from the 70s and talk about their idiotic feud?
Oh, they had a feud. This just got spicy.
That's the theme. Well, they quote unquote had a feud. They like, I'll explain it as we go on, but I chose Steely Dan and the Eagles and their little universe, how they both reference each other in individual 1976 songs, and then I'm going to bring it all home in my third pick.
Nice.
Wowie, wow, wow. I did not know this.
You have a whole storyline like going on parallel to this? I'm into it.
I'm here for the hot goss.
Yeah. Yeah, look, so I don't know if it's like the three Advil combined with the couple for sips of my Labatt Blue, but no. I am vibing.
Okay. All right. Yes.
Let's do this.
We're here for this. Right. Ooh, I want that hot guy.
So yeah, I mean, I was particularly interested in artists communicating through their songs that actually didn't have anything to do with a romantic relationship. So the two lines that stood out in my mind were the two lines in two songs from these two bands, Steely Dan and the Eagles. The song from Steely Dan is Everything You Did and the Eagles' Hotel California. So let's start with the first song, Everything You Did by Steely Dan. Okay. This came out in 1976 and appeared on their album, The Royal Scam. The song lyrics written by Walter Becker and Donald Fagen tell the tale of a jealous lover who catches his partner cheating and then wants to know about all of the acts that took place between lovers.
Mm.
It's specifically the line in this song that they sing, and it goes, "Turn up the Eagles, the neighbors are listening."
Ah! I don't know if I queued it up to that, but like, ooh. Hot gas. All right, let's just hear a snippet of it.
Now you better tell me everything you did, baby. I jump out of my easy chair. It was not my own. Now I wanna hear about everything you did.
podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch, and organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business, from the launch your online shop stage all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/realm. As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch, and organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business, from the launch your online shop stage all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/realm.
I did it. I did it. But also,
there
like,
you go. A roller skater. I know a roller skater.
Wait, is that like a reference? You're a roller skater. A roller skater is easy or something?
That was interesting.
Not for me to say.
Steely Dan, we need your thoughts and opinions on roller skaters. Oh my God. I never knew that there was a feud. Like, yeah. Why were they feuding? Were they just like, meh, no, like Steely Dan?
Okay. So this line in particular, turn up the eagles, the neighbors are listening, refers to how when Becker would argue with his girlfriend, they'd turn up the eagles to drown out their shouting.
Oh.
But legend has it that his girlfriend at the time was always playing the eagles and this bothered him. Asked by Uncut what he thought when he heard the line, Don Henley replied, I know them pretty well. And it was like he was sort of saying, everybody's in LA playing this fucking record and I'm sick of it. It was a little bit of an acknowledgement and a little bit taking the piss because we had the same management. We still do. But, you know, very droll. Fagan in particular.
Wow.
Ooh.
Shots fired.
So I'll let you guys move on with yours, but the next time we come back to me, we're going to talk about the Eagles' response to that.
Oh my God, I love it. Like this. Oh my God, I love this.
Keeping people on the edge of their seats.
You know,
guys are professionals.
You pay for the whole seat, but you only need the edge. My God. All right. Well, to be continued.
And it's just so dumb. Let's just get.
That's half the reason why I like doing this show, because we get to like gossip about like dumb 70s rock dudes doing stupid shit. That's like the best part.
And we get to make fun of Don Henley and a lot in this episode. Yeah. So I love that.
Perfect.
All righty. Miss Lynx, would you like to introduce your first pick?
Yes. Okay. So yeah, Mrs. Potter's Lullaby is by the Counting Crows. Can't say I'm a huge fan of theirs, but I thought the story was interesting. Are you a huge fan?
No, I hate them.
Oh, okay, yeah. I was like, oh my dear God, because I want to make fun of them.
Oh, I will help you.
Good. Okay. So exciting. Good, 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 good.
So yeah, while we were syncing up the YouTube videos to play them, we were doing that. I'm like, I hate to say it, but I fucking hate the Counting Crows. I fucking hate that guy. I hate his face and his dumb dreads.
We're gonna make fun of his dumb dreads a lot.
Please, absolutely. I'm right there with you. I'm not picking this song because I adore it. I just thought it was an interesting
story. It has a good story,
and I want to make fun of him.
That's what we're here for.
So yeah, the song was written by Adam Duritz about the actress Monica Potter. Uh-huh. So Monica was pretty big in the late 90s. She had two big blockbuster hits come out within a year, and that was Con Air and Patch Adams.
Oh.
Yeah. Oh.
She was also in like Along Came a Spider. She was like in a couple of like thrillers.
Absolutely. I think she was in a couple like
spoilers. She ended up being a villain.
Yeah. Along Came a Spider. And then the teen movie she did was with like Freddie Prinze.
Yes.
Where she like lived with models.
Yes. What was it?
Oh, I don't know. I was like, she's
the
all that.
The only thing that's coming to mind is she's all that.
It's always. She's all that. If she takes off her glasses, she's hot.
Head over heels.
Yes. Oh. Thank you.
I was like, it's like a she's all that. Yeah. I mean, they all were like
the same thing. This is the same thing.
So it was either seeing one or the other. I imagine he wants to say it was seeing Con Air, but it was probably Patch Adams that inspired him to write this song, right?
Which is a real downer of a movie.
Yeah. Well, Adam Duritz is a downer, so.
The lyrics are pretty straightforward. Do you want to play a clip?
Yeah, sure. Let's hear a little snippet of this, babe.
Swinging trapezes through circles of flame. If you've never stared off into the distance, then your life is a shame. No, I'll never forget your face. Sometimes I can't remember my name. Hey, Mrs. Potter, don't cry. Hey, Mrs. Potter, I know why. But hey, Mrs. Potter, won't you talk to me?
Nobody.
All of their songs kind of sound the same to me.
They do.
Right?
Yeah.
So, yeah, the lyrics are basically about someone falling in love with this idealized version of someone and, you know, the hope that we all have at the beginning of a new romance when we don't actually know the person and we're just projecting everything that we want them to be on them.
Yeah. Oh, that makes sense.
We all do it.
Yeah.
Towards the end of the song, he sings, "I don't know you and you're probably not what you seem, but I'd sure like to find out why don't you climb off that movie screen."
Oh.
Mm. Oh.
Okay.
So apparently he wrote the song in an 8-hour sitting before meeting Monica. He just saw the movie and was in awe of her beauty, of course.
Okay. I mean, I guess.
I know.
She's fine. She's pretty.
Yeah, she's pretty.
I'm sure she's a nice girl.
I think about that movie where she's like all next to all the supermodels and it's like, yeah, like you're not a supermodel, but you're very pretty. But
yes.
Yeah. So as fate would have it, though, their paths were about to cross.
Oh.
Yes. So about a week after Adam wrote the song, he got a call from a friend of his saying that he was with Monica's agent and how they kind of just wanted to go out for dinner with him. I don't know if she was the one who pushed it or if she heard already that he wrote a song. I'm sure they had in between people who are like, you know, like telling things that was going on. So the weirdest coincidence, though, is that he was actually at the studio setting up to record Mrs. Potter's Lullaby at the time that he got. Yeah. So he was like, okay, I'm going to leave the studio. Let's go meet up. So he met up with Monica and friends of theirs for dinner. So
interesting.
Yeah, right? The odds are just so strange. Monica learns about the song. She's extremely flattered, of course, and he invites her back to the studio for the recording. I have a book called The Girl in the Song by Michael Heatley. And there's a quote in there from Monica. She says, "He wrote this song about me, and I was so flattered because I had just gotten divorced and it was a very hard time." Oh, which I feel like explains a lot. Like, yeah. Monica, I get it. I get it.
I feel you, girl.
Because before I was like, really? But now I'm like, okay, yeah, you're going through a hard time.
Before hearing that, you're like, this guy wrote a song about you and you're flattered? Okay. I mean,
the 90s were different.
It was a weird time, I guess.
Never met, but she
you
was
never
like,
met and okay.
Yeah.
But somehow, so, apparently Adam Duritz has that like magic
je ne sais quoi.
Yes.
Je ne sais quoi that like we just don't understand.
We will talk about that in a minute. Oh, for sure. Please let us talk about that. That's exactly why I picked this song.
Yes.
But back to Monica. Over the next few weeks, Adam and the band were working on the album and they were mixing the song. And they end up with so many overdubs and edits that the band just hated the song. They felt like they completely ruined it. They were like, it's no good. It's too much. Like, let's cut it. So they decided to cut it from the album. But during those weeks, he was also developing this relationship with Monica. And he was at her house one day and he was telling her, like, we can't use the song. It's garbage. And she was like, what do you mean? Like, it's great. I listen to it every day. And he's like, what do you mean you listen to it every day? So apparently the producer, the Counting Crows producer, had given her a tape marked Potter Take 4. And she had this early version of it and she played it all the time and she played it for Adam and he loved it. And he realized like, oh shit, like we just put too much in. Like we just need to strip it back.
Mm-hmm.
He says, it's funny how you can destroy a song by breaking it down too much. You lose perspective. This is a perfect example of how you can completely screw up something great. So they took that version of it, I assume mixed it and everything. And that's the version that ended up on their 1999 album, This Desert Life. And they released it as a single with a video that features a Monica Potter lookalike.
Weird, but yep. Okay.
Not her, but lookalike. I read online that some of the other songs off that album were influenced by her, including Colorblind, 4 Days, and Kids Things, though I couldn't find anywhere where either of them say that specifically, so I don't know if it's just presumption because that's when they were dating when he was writing that or not, so I don't want to say for certain those were about her. Their relationship didn't last long, of course, and in 2006, while on stage, Adam commented that Monica, and I'm quoting here, turned out not to be exactly like the role she played on screen.
Oh,
no shit.
My God.
No shit.
Fuck
no
you.
Shit.
No and shit. No shit, Adam. Dreadhead bullshit motherfucker.
Yeah. So yeah, life imitating art there. And yeah, of course she's not. She's an actress. She's playing a character.
Yeah. That's her. It's literally her job to be different people.
Now, this is the real question. She obviously wasn't the only woman on the big screen that Adam fell for.
Mm-hmm.
He has an incredible array of actresses that he's dated in the 90s. I'm going to name some. Courteney Cox, Jennifer Aniston, Laura Flynn Boyle, Mary Louise Parker, Samantha Mathis, Emmy Rossum, and he was also rumored with Winona Ryder and Nicole Kidman.
What?
How?
What?
How?
Right?
Wow.
I don't get it. Like, I really don't want to offend the guy because he seems like he's a soft boy. But like, soft boy. How? I don't understand how anybody can look at that guy for like across the room and be like, oh my God, he's so sexy.
One time I like kind of dated a guy just because he had an Australian accent.
I mean, that's legit.
Yeah.
If Adam Duritz had like an Australian anything else accent, about him.
Accents are he's hot. Got something. Do you yeah. know what I mean?
He has yeah, to have something.
So is like a stage presence. So is like filling out a stadium. So is like money.
I have seen them on stage. I have worked their show once and I still don't get it.
Thank you. I thought you were like, you know what? I could see it. No.
I mean, I guess maybe he's just the kind of guy you have to be around to get it.
I imagine his personality must be like
it's got to be off the charts,
right?
He probably is just one. Maybe he's a sociopath and he knows how to present himself like when he first meets people. And then once like the mask starts to come off and you're like, oh, no, this is exactly turning out how I thought it would turn out.
Maybe.
That's my
assumption. Maybe he just meets these women at the right moment, right? Like she just had a divorce. Maybe
that's a contributor for sure.
Are we going to have to do an investigative podcast where we try to figure out what it is about Adam Duritz?
Yes.
All right. We can call it There's Something About Adam Duritz and talk to everybody else who knows him, but never talk to him.
Yes. There's something about Adam.
Give it a really serious tone to it. Yes. No laughing at all.
Yes. This is going to be.
There must be something about Adam.
There's gotta
be. My God, I would happily date any of those women.
Yes.
Yeah. Honestly, I would. I would so much rather date the women than Adam Duritz.
That was a downstep for all of those women. All of them. Oh my God, I loved that story. I loved making fun of Adam Duritz.
Thank you for indulging me.
And now I'm gonna have to work on my true crime voice. There's a man named Adam Duritz, and somehow he dates beautiful women, and we don't know how.
On the next episode of There's Something About Adam, we take a deep dive into his first major girlfriend, and she has things to say.
Oh my God, want that?
That was perfect.
Oh, we're doing it. That's our next foray.
That's it. Yep.
Anyway, so my song, my second pick is about a lady and is not necessarily a romantic song, but it also is kind of a romantic song. It's about a lot of ladies and a lot of scenarios.
A lot of ladies, a lot of songs, some songs about ladies, but ladies.
Songs.
And songs.
It's Fleetwood Mac's Sarah.
Yay.
I could just listen to the song for 20 hours. It's fine.
What is a playlist episode for Rock Candy without Fleetwood Mac?
Yeah. No, it doesn't exist.
We have to have a Fleetwood Mac song on every playlist episode.
I almost picked a Stevie Nicks one as well. Because someone has to put Stevie in here, right?
I mean, full disclosure.
If you want to hear about
Shanti.
No. I'm glad you did. If you want to hear about what a dickhead Lindsay Buckingham is, head over to episode. Yes. I don't know what episode it is, but we talk about Carol Ann Harris's autobiography Storms about being in a relationship with Lindsay. And contenting. It's not an easy episode to listen to.
We covered Fleetwood Mac in our third episode. Please do not go listen to it because it is not great.
Like the audio is bad and like we can do better. Yeah,
we will do better. At some point we will recover Fleetwood Mac, but yeah. Did you read? You read her autobiography.
And I'm like, I'm 50-50 on it. Cause some of it, I'm like, there's factual evidence that what you're saying isn't true. But then like, I 100% believe everything she says about Lindsay Buckingham being a piece of garbage.
Cause he was a piece of garbage to Stevie Nicks too.
Oh my God. So like, she even talks about that in her book about how he treated her so shitty.
Yeah.
She's like, whoa.
Yep.
He's kind of mean to her ex. Wow. Good thing I'm not his ex yet. This song fortunately doesn't have too much to do with Lindsay. I mean, it kind of does. I don't even know if I even need my notes because I feel like between all of us
already know.
All of us fucking Fleetwood Mac heads, we all know. But yeah, I mean, this song is definitely about a lot of ladies, named though after Sarah, was it Recor, the woman who married Mick Fleetwood?
Yeah, I think it's,
is it Recor?
I'm not sure.
I just feel bad if I'm saying her name wrong, but while Mick was still married to Jenny Boyd, he started having an affair with Stevie because she just broke up with Lindsay. And like, Stevie's in a place and they're all doing cocaine, even though Stevie was dating Don Henley.
Yep.
But Don Henley, also a piece of shit with like crazy curly hair.
Who looked strikingly like Lindsay at one point.
They really did. Like around that time, they kind of look the same.
Yeah.
It's weird. So even later on, Stevie says like her relationship with Don was just like not great.
Yeah.
Like they weren't a good couple. So she starts sleeping with Mick and they like develop this whole thing. And then her friend Sarah, I think if I understand it right, meets Mick and is like, yo, let me climb that tall ass ladder though and get a drink of water. I want that tall boy. Honestly, 70s Mick Fleetwood
would hit it.
Mm-hmm. All day, every day.
Oh my Irish God, 2020 beard. Mick Fleetwood. I'd still hit it.
You know what?
Honestly, right.
I think he looks better now.
Especially when we went and saw them in concert a couple years ago.
He looked great.
He looked fantastic.
I was like, shit.
Can still get it.
Yeah. Oh God. But so Sarah kind of makes her moves on Mick, and Mick's like, yo, I'm into this. And then they start dating, and Stevie's like, well, I guess that's it for me. May
was fun, thanks.
And actually what Stevie said hurt her more wasn't like not being with Mick anymore, but she felt like she kind of lost her friendship with Sarah after that, and like that was actually more painful because it was like an awkward friendship after that. But then Don slides on and is like, nah, this song's about our baby that she aborted. And she's like, can you not, Don? Because like,
Don,
apparently
pulling a Kanye.
Oh, yeah, right. Nobody asked for this, Donye.
But he said Stevie always loved the name Sarah, and she said like, oh, if like I could have this baby, which like, here's the thing, they made a proper adult decision. We're like, it is not fair to bring this kid into the world right now because neither of us are in a fucking place to have a kid.
Mm-hmm.
So she got an abortion, but said, you know, if it was a girl and we had it, I'd name her Sarah. Which I think there is some truth to that part. But also, like, go fuck yourself, Don Henley.
Yeah.
And, but also, Stevie does reference this as pretty much one of her favorite songs. And the song itself is a muse for her. You know, Sarah, you're the poet of my soul. You know, that's all, like, the song kind of just represents a lot of her inner being.
Mm.
There's a lot in this song. I like that it's, like, a real onion of a beautiful fucking song.
Yeah.
It is.
Fucking jam. Fuck Don Henley.
is that the same friend that passed away a few years after this, or is that a different person?
I think that was a different person.
Okay.
I know. It's Stevie writes a lot of very autobiographical personal songs, and it's very easy to confuse them.
Well, true. It's a very good song, and some versions are very long.
I know. I was like, oh shit, I grabbed the best of, which is like 7 minutes. Whoops.
Oops.
But also, no, I'll listen to it.
It's also very good.
It's a good jam.
So my next. That's
beautiful.
So to continue on this theme of unconventional muses.
Yeah.
This one is Devin Townsend's Canada. And he is also Canadian, which I thought was appropriate since our guests are Canadian.
Mm-hmm. Yay!
Yay.
Woo!
Drinking your Labatt Blue. So, yeah, play the clip.
Okay. Yeah, Canada.
Yeah. So I know the last time we were talking about doing this episode, you guys said you don't know who Devin Townsend is.
If you want to know about Devin Townsend, you can listen to our episode from, like, I don't know,
like 2 years ago.
Yeah. And we just sing, or we talk about how we want him to sing into our vaginas because he has an amazing voice.
Yeah, he has.
He does.
Cool. He has an amazing, amazing voice. So Devin is from Canada. He's from Vancouver, however, which is the exact opposite coast from you guys. But he's been around for a really long time, a really amazing metal musician and songwriter. But
puts on a great show.
Fantastic show. He's weird and he's funny. So that's all you really need to know. But this song in particular was written for Devin's 2001 album Terria, which was a tribute to his homeland of Canada. So we're doing country as muse in this album. So it's kind of nice to not have like a person, but more just a land.
Yeah.
Of Canada.
Lovely country.
So he wrote Terria after touring across the country and falling back in love with the country. And he had also released a really bad album in 2000 called Physicist. Don't listen to that one, please. Don't. It's terrible. It's terrible. And that album, everyone, including Devin, hated. And he felt he needed to make a better album to repay his debts to society, to his country. So he made Terria. And this song in particular is like calling out Canada as being a beautiful country and how much, you know, it's inspired him. And there is one particular... Because Devin is really weird with his lyrics, he'll go from like philosophical to completely fucking literal in within like between a chorus and a verse. So there's one like kind of bridge part in this song where he literally just lists like the economic things that are great about Canada. He's like, it's wheat, it's oil, it's beef. And it's really fucking funny. But it's really, it makes sense and it's very Devin. Yeah. And this song just really is, it has metal aspects to it, but it's very mellow. This whole album is pretty mellow for a metal guy. But it's so cohesive and it makes so much sense. And he did such a fucking good job on it. Highly recommend this album. It's one of my favorite Devin Townsend albums. So yeah, country as muse.
Yeah. And I think it's the sound of it, too, at least in this part, not when it goes to the breakdown part.
Not like, when he's screaming about beef.
Beef! But, like, this part specifically has, like, that very kind of ethereal
feel. That very ethereal Devin Townsend, like, wall of sound kind of.
I could picture climbing a mountain in Vancouver and be like, this is pretty. And yeah, listening to the song, like, yeah,
I like it here.
Beef. I get it.
Beef.
I like beef. Denim, Labatt Blue,
and beef.
Yeah. And beef. You know what? I like it here.
I'm proud to be a Canadian.
Right.
Got it. Cool. Yeah. Good to know.
No,
I'm
going to
make Thank sure you. That I put him on my list. And anytime he visits Toronto and tours here, I'm definitely going to check him out next time.
Yeah. Oh, his show is super fun.
Very, very good. He has a lot of different side projects, too, that he brings into his shows and does music from kind of all of them. So it's fantastic. I just love his shows.
That you educated us on a Canadian.
Yay, look at us. We're helping.
Yay.
That's okay. Shanti is educating us hardcore on the 70s drums.
I am here for it.
Gorgeous transition. Why don't we just go ahead and pop back into 1976.
The scene is 1976.
All right.
Last
time. So the second pick for this song is won by the Eagles that responded to Steely Dan's super hard put down. So not that anybody needs this song on any more playlists, but it's Hotel California. And I'm going to give you the line and I'll tell you specifically where in the song you can find it because it's towards the end.
Oh, yeah.
The line is, they stab it with their steely knives, but they just can't kill the beast.
Oh, shit. So,
Steely Knives is for Steely Dan.
Champagne on ice. And she said, we are all just prisoners here of our own device. And in the master's chambers, gathered for the feast. They stab it with their steely knives, but they just can't kill the beast. Last thing I remember, I was running for the door. I had to find the passage back to the place I was before. Relax, said the nightman. We are programmed to receive. You can check.
But you can never leave. I had to. I'm so sorry.
I always wondered what they meant by that lyric.
I just thought it was, they were really sharp knives.
Yeah, like they're really shiny.
Like they got those really
good knives.
Shanti's got the goss.
Look no further.
Give me that hot goss.
Look no further because I've been aware of this since approximately 2005, and in my part three of why, I will explain why I even give a shit about any of this. So,
yes, I love this.
They can stab it with their steely knives, but they just can't kill the beast can be taken two ways. If you want to look at it more as a clapback response in the way that only privileged white male rockers could do, it's just them insulting Steely Dan. Apparently, they changed the lyrics to stab it with their Steely Dans, but changed it to knives because obviously...
It's too obvious.
That it would be too obvious. And also the steely knife can be referred to either as a phallic symbol because like ha-ha gay jokes and also a hypodermic needle because the song was about a seedier side of LA.
Okay.
Ooh, yep.
Finally, Fry himself has said, one of the things that impressed us about Steely Dan was that they would say anything in their songs and it didn't have to necessarily make sense, he said. They called it joke sculpture. When we thought of the song Hotel California, we started thinking that it would be very cinematic to do it sort of like a Twilight Zone. You just have one line that says there's a guy on the highway. The next line says there's a hotel in the distance and there's a woman there. And then he walks in. It's just all one shot strung together and you sort of draw your own conclusions from it. He recalled that and he said Henley was sort of trying to expand our lyrical horizons and just take on something in the realm of the bizarre as Steely Dan had done. So really huge like Eagles heads and Steely Dan heads might go, look, there was actually no feud at all. If anything, they were on the same management. They were trying to one-up each other and it was a playful... It was a playful jab at each other, but nothing sincerely...
You can almost say that like. Steely Dan was a muse for that song.
Yeah. You could, especially because they wanted to emulate that style a little bit. But in my third part, I'm not even going to spoil it.
Buckle up.
It's going to be a bit of an experimental, fictionalized version of how the two bands came together to be on my third song.
Ooh. Okay. Oh my God. Man, this is
gonna be exciting.
I'm you know what? I'm enticed. I'm here for it. I'm still on the
edge. Got a whole story beginning to end
Yeah. That's what someone told me on TikTok recently. I posted this like a 60-second clip about a song, and someone's like, a story needs to have a beginning, a middle, and an end.
Like, I'm sorry, I don't have that much time on TikTok.
Like six seconds is how most people's.
Also, I'm talking about reality, okay? I'm not talking about a story. This has happened in real life. Sometimes there's no ending.
But also, if you want a beginning, a middle, and an end, listen to my fucking podcast. We have plenty of beginnings and middles and ends over there.
Somebody also commented on TikTok, wait, is this TikTok just a promotion for your podcast? And it's like, yes, motherfucker. That's exactly what it is. Yeah.
What are you
what
doing
else do you TikTok?
Think?
Do you think I do it for fun?
Yeah, seriously.
Oh my god, why do you think we haven't gotten on TikTok yet? We're like, oh god, this is
nobody
this is
over the age of 30 does TikTok for fun.
Yeah, they do it for money and hits, god damn it.
Exactly.
Yo, times are tough and I haven't started an OnlyFans yet. Well, all right, well, stay tuned everyone for Return of the Dan.
Yes,
coming up. The conclusion of this feud. Until then, let's go into Sean or Lynx's pick.
Okay, so my next one is going to be Jim Carroll, the Jim Carroll Band, and a song that they did called Crow. So Jim Carroll is best known as a poet and an author. Leonardo DiCaprio played him in the film version of his memoir, The Basketball Diaries.
I know the name.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. God, I watched that when I shouldn't have been watching it.
Absolutely.
Because it's Leonardo DiCaprio.
I think we're all like the same age, same generation.
Yep.
DiCaprio, like you were watching that at like 9, 10, 11. Like,
yeah.
Being like, ooh. Yeah. And still being like super attracted to him, even when he's like, you know,
strung out
and his
gross.
Mother. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's got like the snot coming out of his mouth and like, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Leo's the best crier. He's the best crier. And all he of the fully movies commits. Where he's like losing his mind. Ugh.
He's like, this is my one shot to make this cry like real hard and real believable. So go all in. But anyway.
So the Jim Carroll Band released their debut album, Catholic Boy, in 1980. This is a fantastic album. I play it all the time. It's honestly a favorite of mine. Highly recommend beginning to end. It's great. And it really tells his story. And I really love that. And that's also why I love this song, because I love when songs contain like a whole, a beginning, a middle, and an end. So, I just like when they like contain a story within them and like you get to know someone's life through like a song in one go type of thing.
Yeah.
Of course, I guess that there was no end because that was 1980 and this person's still alive. But up until that point, he told her story. Okay. So this song is about Patti Smith, who is also a poet and a musician that I adore so much. And it was interesting because I've loved both of them separately ever since I was maybe like 10, 11, 12 and discovered them. But it was only in the past maybe 5 or 6 years that it clicked that this song was actually about Patti. It's one of those things that like, you know, the lyrics, you hear it all the time, but you don't like hear it. You listen, but you don't hear. And so I thought I'd touch a little bit on each verse, but let's hear a clip first and go from there.
Okay.
And you start singing just like light to a black block. You start sliding like burns into a circle. The crow, when you throw yourself under, sing as hard when you can't lose control. They don't know to them the dog, you don't whisper nothing. And they're all gonna try and make the wind from y'all. Hard to be a cashier in a bookstore. Hey, to be surrounded by a history of your true loves. And you get naked between deep shelves in a back room. And have to bring your tan by sharp fluorescent light tubes. And you start spinning like the pillars in the temple. You start screaming just like Sister Amy Simple. The crow, when you throw yourself under. The streets are hard when you cannot lose control.
Yeah, I could see where he's going with this. Also, I've never listened to his music before, but I'm really vibing on it.
Oh yeah. My God. You like listen to whole album. I swear you're going to love it so much. It's okay. So good. It's so good. So that was the second verse in which he mentions being working as a cashier at a bookstore.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Patti Smith worked at the Strand in New York, my favorite bookstore, actually.
Oh yeah.
And I love the imagery there of like you get naked in the back shelves of, you know, and get your brain a tan by the fluorescent lights and everything. I just love that. I love it so much. And in the opening line, he says, "It must be strange to fall from the stage and snap a bone that's so close to the brain." And that refers to a show that took place in Tampa, Florida in 1977. Patti plunged 15 feet into the orchestra. God. Yeah. She tripped over an amp that was not secured. And she was left with a fractured spine, a broken vertebrae. I think she had 22 stitches in her head.
God.
It was a big thing. So yeah, the first verse, he tells that story. The second, he's telling her about her time as a cashier in a bookstore. In the final verse, he talks about how Patti cared for him during his roughest years. He says, "It was so sweet when you brought donuts to the junkies. You'd give us something we'd slip into our coffee. We'd start reading lines from poems that didn't matter. You covered me with blankets in the Chelsea hotel lobby, and I'd start reaching for the scar along your belly." So the scar he's referring to is the C-section that she had because she had a child that she gave up for adoption when she was 19. Mm-hmm. And when they met, she was a resident at the Chelsea Hotel. And Jim and her were briefly together, but of course he was, he had his own issues. She mm-hmm. had her own issues. So their relationship turned into more of like a deep friendship and respect. And it was also at the Chelsea that Patti got her nickname Crow, not from Carol, but actually from Salvador Dali.
Oh, yeah. Crazy.
In her, right?
I forgot about that.
Yeah. In her book, Just Kids, she says, "I was thinking about what a magic portal this lobby was when the heavy glass door opened as if swept by a wind and a familiar figure, black with a scarlet cape, entered. It was Salvador Dali. He looked around the lobby nervously and then, seeing me, smiled. He placed his elegant bony hand atop my head and said, 'You are like a crow, a gothic crow.'"
Oh, but that's such adorable. A compliment.
What a compliment.
Right? Oh my God. Right? Crows are great.
And so fitting too. So yeah. Fitting. And she also did a play with Sam Shepard, and her character wanted to be a crow. And I don't know if that happened after this and like that inspired her or if that was a weird coincidence, but
all I can picture is Moira Rose.
Right?
All I can picture.
The crows have eyes. So good. It's so good. I know. I tried to do all crow themed, but I couldn't for this. I'm sorry, but
that's okay. No worries. I still appreciate two this imagery.
You know what? A wise man once said, 2 out of 3 ain't bad.
It's true. So before I finish up here, I just want to say both Patti and Jim began their careers as poets, and they performed at the St. Mark's Poetry Project all the time. And that's where Patti began doing her performance pieces with Lenny Kaye playing guitar in the background. And the first time that happened was actually a strange kind of happy accident where she was supposed to be performing with Jim, but he ended up getting arrested and he didn't make it to the show. Yeah.
Ooh.
And that's when Lenny stepped in and helped her out. So that's when she began to build this music career.
Oh, shit.
And Jim kind of focused on his writing. Jim ended up moving to San Francisco, and his first kind of foray into music was writing for other artists. First, because Patti was dating Alan from Blue Oyster Cult, and he mm-hmm. helped write with them, and Patti did as well. And then Patti was touring with her band, and she asked Jim, would he come on stage and open for her when she was in San Diego, I believe. And he said, sure. I have a quote from Jim. He says, "I went out on stage and it was incredible because for the first time in my life, I was having fun on stage. I never liked giving poetry readings, but there was this incredible energy from these kids in the audience. And there was this incredible energy coming from the music behind me. this was my first taste of really doing it and liking it, having all this energy, having all these kids to perform for. It was not just some stuffy college poetry audience. It was great. And I decided after that, maybe I could do this and perform myself.
Yeah, so concerts are great.
And I love how they both not only like inspired each other, but they both pulled themselves into a career that they didn't even realize was meant for them.
Yeah, right? That's crazy. Like, that is really crazy. It's like, because that one night he wasn't there, she got her career started. And then because she got her career started, she could start his career. That is really fucking crazy how that works.
It's a nice domino effect of niceness.
That's not, I like nice stories. Yeah. We don't hear them enough.
It's true. Exactly. I wanted to mention, in case anyone hasn't seen it, because it's so 80s and ridiculous and amazing that you should. But Jim and his band, the Jim Carroll Band, are featured in the 80s teen classic Tough Turf with James Spader and Robert Downey Jr.
Oh my God.
And the Jim Carroll Band like play in one scene. You can even look it up on YouTube, like just the Jim Carroll part.
Yeah.
They play my favorite songs actually in the movie, but I think you should watch the whole movie because it's just so ridiculously 80s and amazing.
Yeah.
And
of course. Yeah, that sounds Spader, like a good one to just MST3K.
Oh my god, yes. See that.
yes. Please do it. Jim Carroll died in 2009. He was 60. Patty, of course, has paid tribute to Jim in her other live shows. She's covered his biggest hit, which was probably People Who Died, which is a song all about remembering and celebrating, you know, your friends who have passed on.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's nice.
That sucks that he's died, but I'm
that was awesome. Fucking Lynx. She's
I know, right? I'm like, what is this?
Damn it, Lynx.
God, with all these fucking notes.
Been doing this with
you
for 5 years and I'm still impressed. She impresses me every time.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, last round.
Last round. Last songs. And I'm
last call.
Last call.
Ooh. You don't gotta go home, but you can't stay here.
In 30 minutes. Anyway, so my last pick, also another one with several stories to it, a little bit on the different side, is The Kinks' Lola. I'm not dumb, but I can understand why she walk like a woman, but talk like a man. Welcome to that being stuck in your head for the next day.
Yeah,
welcome.
I think we have one coming up soon that might just.
Oh no, yeah, there's one that's gonna kick
you right out of your head.
But yeah, I friggin' love this song. One of my favorite memories about that song is years ago I worked at the Troy Music Hall, which is performance venue in downtown Troy, and on Wednesdays during the day they had like this Wednesday farmers market, and just during the summer, and I was going down to it just to grab some snacks. And they would let people perform. I would see performers around like the center square performing. And one time there was a boy, could not have been older than 12, just jamming out on an acoustic guitar to Lola. And I'm like, you are adorable. Singing about a drag queen / transgender and woman. And I am so here for it.
Amazing.
Freaking cute. It was like the nicest thing. It almost made my ovaries work. I was like,
almost.
Like, I could have a kid if it was going to be cute like you.
And I don't want to have it and then wait 12 years.
Exactly.
Maybe it's shit. Just,
yeah, right.
Maybe the kid's shit.
I'm still going to fuck this up. You know what? No, you have great. They're doing it right. I'm not going to do it right. That's why I have pets. But so there are a couple different stories on the origin of who this song is about. But either way, it's definitely like a drag queen or a transgender woman. Also, I'm going to say transgendered, even though in every source they say, like, quote unquote, like, tranny or transsexual.
Oh my God.
These are not okay words.
Not okay.
So just prefacing that.
Yeah. So and transgender without the D.
Yes.
Right.
Transgender. Correct. So lead singer Ray Davis said it was based on his personal experience when one night he was asked by a transgendered woman if he'd like to dance. He admitted she was gorgeous, but still declined the dance for obvious reasons because he's like, oh, I can tell it's not a woman and I'm still slightly... It's the 70s, guys.
I'm still slightly a very homophobic straight man. Yeah. But not homophobic.
No, no, like, they're not homophobic.
Scared.
He's just scared.
Uninterested.
Yeah, or uninterested. All right, all right. This is a good way to put it. But it doesn't stop there. The story goes that the Kinks manager, Robert Wace, ended up dancing with her that night. And then some say that they took a cab to his place afterwards. And then some beyond that say that they dated for a while.
Good for them.
I don't know how valid those parts are at the end. I think he probably did dance with her because there's like a conversation I guess they all had about like the next day. Like, oh, did you dance with her? No, I didn't. Oh, I think Robert did. Yeah, well, I saw the 5 o'clock shadow on her or something. Like, so I think some kind of... Something probably happened with the manager, but I don't know to what extent.
As all of our eyes roll in unison.
Yep.
Yeah.
The Kinks, though, apparently did tend to draw like a decent LGBTQ plus crowd. Like they aren't strangers to singing about sexuality and like even like homosexuality and, you know, cross dressers, drag queens, whatnot. Because a lot of their songs would speak of that. Actually, Dave Davies, Ray's brother slash the guitarist, was bisexual or is bisexual. Well, he's like, I'm not bi, I've just, you know, I've fucked men. If you don't look them in the eye, it's not gay.
It's one of those things where it's like, I think of the times where like the word scares them because they don't fully understand what it means.
Like, I think that's what it was.
Like, yeah, but it's,
you get it.
Yeah. But he's definitely bi, so, and that's great. I think that's awesome. Others have speculated that it is about Candy Darling, part of the Warhol group that Ray actually ended up befriending. And some say he dated her, he denies it. Again, I don't know. But I looked at pictures of Candy, I'm like, work, girl.
She's beautiful. So beautiful.
Links, plug your episode.
Plug your episode.
I did an episode on the song Walk on the Wild Side, which Candy is in. Mm-hmm. And a whole bunch of other Warhol superstars, and check that out if you want to learn more about them.
I do, actually. I don't know shit about the Warhol group, so I really need to try.
They talk longer. About five different Warhol people in that episode, so
That's awesome. I definitely need to get more into it. But Candy herself, and I'm sure you know this and talked about this, Candy herself is a trans icon. She always knew she was different and was cross-dressing in the early 60s despite bullying and threats that she was subjected to. She was like, no, but like, this is who I am. She met Andy Warhol in the late 60s, who caught her in a friend's play and asked her to be in some of his movies. And you know what? There may have been a long career for her there, but unfortunately, she died of lymphoma at the age of 29.
Oh my God. That is so young.
Lymphoma at 29? I was like, that's not real Wikipedia. So I had to like go look up at other places. I'm like, oh, that's real.
Yeah. Wow.
That's not a thing that happens.
It's interesting also because you know that at the time, transitioning was not as easy as it is now.
Oh, yeah.
Not easy now, but... I think she was doing things, you know, injecting things and stuff that might not have been through the safety of a doctor.
Yeah. Oh, I didn't even think
and things
of that.
Like that. Yeah.
Oh shit. Yeah.
I imagine that played some part, which, yeah, and again, sure. That's like really upsetting because it's like people who know who they are should have the ability to be able to
be who they are.
Exactly. Yeah.
No, I agree completely.
And have it recognized by medical organizations as a legitimate thing and have it covered by health insurers
and have it done safely and everything. Exactly.
I mean, if anything, it's tragic, but hopefully her story is kind of that cautionary tale, like, hey, give a shit and help people be who they want to be,
for sure,
in safe manners. Yeah.
And even in that small period of time, she created an amazing legacy.
He clearly influenced a lot of people in a very small amount of time. So I can only imagine what kind of person she was. Yeah. So anyway.
Yes. Great. So what's your final pick?
So my final pick in this final round is "The Way You Used to Do" by Queens of the Stone Age.
Nice.
Okay, I got some delicious tea.
Ooh.
For this one.
Okay. Slightly sweetened.
Okay, so me and Maggie love Queens of the Stone Age. I'm sure you guys at least know.
I love them.
Okay.
Good, good.
We are very big fans of Josh Homme.
Oh.
And yes, that is how you say his last name. Do not come for us. So, Josh Homme, up until relatively recently, was married to Brody Dale, who was the lead guitarist and singer for the Distillers for a long time. And then once the Distillers were done, she had another band called Spinneret. I'm not sure what she's doing now. I think she has a new band. I'm sorry, I don't know the name of them.
She had a solo album as well in between.
She did. Yeah. She did have solo.
I think she's back with the Distillers right now.
Shit.
Yeah, they did kind of revive. They didn't. I'm talking out my ass. I don't know. But anyway, so going back a little bit. So this song is about Brody Dale, Queens of the Stone Age lead singer, composer's ex-wife, now ex-wife. So the story goes, Brody was married to Rancid frontman Tim Armstrong.
No shit.
They met when he was 30 and she was 16. And they waited 2 years until Brody turned 18. And then she moved out to LA with him and they got married. Yikes.
Yikes on bikes. I don't love that.
Yeah. Meanwhile, when Brody was 17, she met Josh Homme, who was 23.
Okay.
And they stayed friends through, you know, her marriage and whatever. But apparently the marriage to Tim Armstrong was not a good one. So Brody and Tim went through a real shitty divorce in 2003. She said it took like 3 years for her to like get up the courage to leave him.
Oh, shit.
And honestly, I believe her.
Oh, yeah.
100% believe her. But their divorce spawned Rancid's album Indestructible, which led to Brody being called the most hated woman in punk rock. Because, of course, everybody in the punk rock scene is going to side with Tim Armstrong because he's the lead singer of Rancid. And she's just, you know, his wife.
Cool.
Right.
Great.
Which is such bullshit.
Love
so,
it.
So like she kind of embraced that label and went on a tour that I think she called the tour like the most hated woman in punk rock or something like that. Which nice. Is like point in your corner, lady. I enjoy that. Like embrace it. Just, you know, take it. So meanwhile, Brody and Josh started dating. They eventually got married. They had 3 kids and they divorced in 2019 with both sides claiming domestic abuse.
Oh, shit.
Yeah. And they both really? got restraining orders on each other.
Oh, my God. I guess it wasn't a great marriage.
So who knows what really is going on there? I don't know. I'm going to have to do a deeper dive because eventually we'll do an episode on Queens of the Stone Age.
We have to.
And I would love to do an episode on Brody Dale too, because she has a fascinating life.
Yeah. I don't know much of anything about her.
Yeah. And the Distillers are a really great band.
Yeah.
I love both of them so much.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And actually Spinneret, their album was really good.
Right.
Really good. And I honestly forgot about them for a long time. Cause I like lost all of my music on my old computer. And now I'm like, oh, fuck, they exist. I should really listen to that album again. It's really good. So, yeah.
I love that album.
this whole song was written after their divorce, and it's really Josh Homme reminiscing about when they first met. Like, the first lines are like, she was just 17 or something like that.
17.
Yeah.
Man, men love 17-year-olds.
They sure do.
They're still young, but they're not old yet, right? They're like, what's your 18? It's like, eh.
Yeah, I know. Hey,
so
let's
creepy.
Wait.
So creepy.
It's so creepy. Let's time out because we can't hear Shanti.
Mic is funky again.
I'm going to have sex bomb in my head now.
Can you hear me now?
Yes. Yes. Yeah. All right.
Well, I was fine. I was just once more singing, you're 16, you're beautiful. I changed it to 17. You're 17 and you're beautiful. And
I mean, I just want to be like, well, she was just 17, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Also, don't you fucking do that.
What? It's like, I know exactly what you mean.
Wait, which song?
That John song where it's like, you can't do that. And I just
God. The other one is the murder song.
This one's the threat song.
This is the threat before the murder.
The Beatles song, you don't do that.
You can't do that.
And yeah. I always just call it, you don't fucking do that to me. Don't you fucking do that. Like, God. Yes. There are plenty of songs about men just threatening young women for existing
and
as
then
a woman.
Come to find out, Norwegian Wood is about how he tried to hook up with somebody. And she was like, no, I have to go to bed. And he's like, all right, I'm going to burn your house down.
I fucking love that song.
I love that song, though.
That song.
Wow. Yeah, it's such a beautiful, this is such a pleasant, it's same with like Maggie May, where you're like, this is such a happy-go-lucky. So
yeah. But then like at the end of Norwegian Wood, he's like, then I lit a fire. Isn't it good?
Norwegian Wood.
Like, that's right. It set her house on fire. Oh, fuck.
Jesus, that got dark so quick. Even with this song, like, this song was like my fucking getting ready jam. I'm like, I'm going to look good tonight. I'm going to go out. I'm going
to
look
like,
so great.
Yeah, the way you used to do. Remember, but it's how about you be 17 like you used to do?
Oh, no. Why? Why we got to be like that?
Yeah. So. I'm sure that there are a lot of other Queens of the Stone Age songs that are inspired by Brody, but I feel like this one is tinged with anger, maybe.
But it's
even
a
though
fucking
it's
jam.
Such a jam.
It's such a jam. Oh, so this album in general is great.
Like Clockwork is like one of my favorite albums, beginning to end, period.
Well, now
they're
they
put you in a good mood. They make me want to dance and like rock at the same. Like,
yes,
they're like a build you up kind of. You put it on, like get ready to go out and like kick ass. You know.
Yes, that's exactly how I feel when I listen to this album. Oh, yeah. God, from Queens of Stone Age. Oh, yeah. Oh wait, but what's happening here? I think it's time for the conclusion of Steely Eagles.
Steely Eagles.
Okay, so let's just go ahead, hop on back. We're gonna go to 1978.
Okay.
This third song is actually a fictionalized version of how Steely Dan and the members of the Eagles came to record a song together called FM No Static at All for the theme of the 1978 film FN. Now, why bother bringing a fictionalized version of all of this? Where am I going with this?
This is getting so meta.
What I want to bring everyone's attention to is an online web series that began in 2005 called Yacht Rock.
Okay.
If you consider yourself a music historian, regardless of what kind of music you like, and you haven't seen the 2005 web series Yacht Rock, which can now be found on YouTube, and look, you're going to go into YouTube, you're going to put it in episode one, and you're gonna go, oh, this quality is not great. Fucking deal with it. It's not.
It's 2005.
It was before YouTube. Know. It was like, it was hosted on the channel called Channel 101. It was at the same time that Andy Samberg and Yorma and Akiva of the Lonely Island were getting their start by putting their web series up.
Yeah, people in my college still had dial-up internet in 2005. So come on.
But this series has really stayed true, and it's really like what's like the test of time. mm-hmm. you can watch it and go, holy shit, these are some comedic geniuses at work. And what they did is they created an entire universe out of a universe that already existed with Steely Dan, Michael McDonald, Toto,
Chris Christopherson. I want to go to there.
Mm-hmm. Hall and Oates, and then even Michael Jackson and Van Halen make their way in it, because all of these bands between the years of 1974 and 1984 all did things on each other's albums. So mm-hmm. to honor music inspired by people, what this fictionalized but also based on these true songs and stories of Yacht Rock did was reimagine how every single one of these songs could have come to be written. So they get all of these, like, their friends basically playing Michael McDonald and Kenny Loggins and Jimmy Messina and the guys in Hall and Oates. And they create the story about how, like, Michael McDonald, and to honor the memory of Coco, want to keep smooth music alive forever. And if anybody kind of differs off the path of smooth music, like, it's a real, like, it's a big thing. And yeah. so they're 5-minute videos, honestly. Like, there's 12 episodes, and they're 5 to 6 minutes each. It's so palatable, but what they do with each episode is so brilliant. So,
we need to do this straight away.
Yeah,
as soon as we're done with this,
make a whole Patreon out of it. Watch it together.
Yeah. That's a good idea. Thank you for that money-making advice. Mm.
So they even, in episode 2, have a song battle between Hall and Oates and Michael McDonald. And so, for example, Hall and Oates is, like, supposed to be the villain because they're not so yacht rocky. And if you hear the term yacht rock now, it's actually like J.D. Reznor and those guys in 2005 that coined this term. But they're not getting any money from it, even though they coined this term. Now there's a Sirius satellite radio.
They should have TM'd that shit, right off the bat.
Yeah. So these guys in episode 10 of Yacht Rock reimagine the feud between Steely Dan and the Eagles, and they make it into something much larger than what it actually was. So there's this, like, big music producer in Hollywood that goes up to Kenny Loggins and goes, "Hey, Loggins, like, I know you're Hollywood's it boy for theme music. I want you to do a hit song for this movie coming called FM. And Kenny Loggins is like, "No, I'm not into that. Try the Eagles, though." So the Eagles were supposed to get it, but it ended up going to Steely Dan. And now, so the episode is going through these guys feuding with each other. And that's where these two songs come into question. So in 2005, I was like, "Oh, do Steely Dan and the Eagles really have a feud?" And upon further investigation, it's like, not really, but kind mm-hmm. of. But these guys in their fictionalized universe made it so that they did, in fact, have this huge feud. Like, the Eagles call Steely Dan nerds all the time. And so, the theme song ended up going to Steely Dan, and then they end up getting into a physical fight in this episode. And the Eagles say, "Sorry, we can't hear you through this dork static," which then is the song "No Static at All." So they always do a little bit of a quip that, like, they'll say, "I'm going to keep the fire burning of this smooth music," and then "keep the fire burning bright." And then they show that song. So it's so brilliant. It's so perfect. They do Sarah's Smile. They do Rosanna.
Amazing.
"Listen to the music on the radio." And it's so perfect with all of these different bands.
Love it.
So anyways, there's a physical fight that happens between Steely Dan and the Eagles. And to kind of make peace, Steely Dan says, "Well, you can sing backing vocals on FM, No Static at All." And then it cues into the song, which you're going to cue into now. And then it's Steely Dan in the studio on their piano. And then once you get to the backup versions, it's like Don Henley and Glenn Frey on the backup singing. So they all come together in the end, put their feud behind them, singing FM, No Static at All. You can go ahead and play that song right now.
Wow.
Mama, it's grapefruit wine.
That is the most yacht rock song I have ever heard.
So they made this song for that.
So it depends on what version you want to hear of the truth. If you want to go into Yacht Rock's imagined universe, where to settle their feud between the Steely Knives and between Turn Up the Eagles, the Neighbors Are Listening, then they all end up together on this 1978 track. And it's the Eagle bands of members of the Eagles that are just in that backing vocals. That's yep. them. But the beauty of this whole universe is that Michael McDonald and Kenny Loggins and Toto and Steely Dan were all singing on each other's records for like an entire mm-hmm. decade. And there must have been a story behind every song. And the way that they craft it is so believable and yes. so just, it's comedic genius that I just really, did I make this episode harder on myself than maybe it needed to be? Maybe. But
worth it.
Worth it.
Worth it.
Do I feel like you guys would really appreciate this? Yes. And everybody else who has any kind of interest in how a song is crafted, how it could possibly be created, mixed in with a bit of DIY filmmaking.
Absolutely.
Yeah, this is the one
I love
for
this
you.
Journey for us.
Yep. Yes, this was a good journey.
Oh my God. Oh, but I also love just thinking about Steely Dan.
I'm just here for the beef. I'm here for the beef between Steely Dan and the Eagles.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I'm just here for that. I want to hear that. Mm-hmm. I want all the tea mm-hmm. between these guys.
I love that it's also called Yacht Rock. Like, it's just so fitting. The name fits so perfectly.
It does.
You never think about it unless it was said to you, and then you're like, absolutely.
I can yeah. imagine all of these guys writing these songs on their yachts.
Oh my
yeah.
God.
So this, yeah, yeah, this makes sense. I'm yeah. here for it.
Yeah, yeah.
And like 50 something year old men on their yachts just jamming out, yeah. thinking just it's like
getting sad. Sunburned and drinking bugs.
Yeah. Well, it's funny because like the whole Yacht Rock series, none of it actually takes place at all on a yacht. Like it mostly takes place in alleys where the guys just like hang out, have a little bit of a conversation, have a bit of a fight, and then they come back and like sing to each other and stuff. I think the intent is that it's like it's springtime, it's now summertime. Yeah. Let's all get
it's
our
nice
margaritas.
And smooth rock.
Let's yeah, let's sail away on a voyage of smooth music.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
But also I'm here for calling it Alley Rock.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Anyways, guys, please, 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 it's worth your time. It's worth your energy. It is such a work of art. It's a work of genius. I watch it once a year. At least I always try my best to spread the word, to show it off to people. And the guys from Yacht Rock have gone on to do things like Rick and Morty and
they've made a name yeah. for themselves. They made their mothers proud.
Aww,
but I believe they still have like a podcast about it, and they are like they're still holding the Yacht Rock torch that.
Oh, that's amazing. I can't. Yeah, we're definitely checking it out. Thank you so much for bringing us on that journey. That was amazing.
Wonderful.
Oh my God. Yeah, just
you
do
really
your
put depth your, into this episode.
Your screen share, watch the whole episode together at the same time, talk about it. You're going to love it.
That's so good.
Care for it.
Yes, for sure.
Well, our last one is definitely the earworm to end all earworms.
Oh my God, you're welcome. This is going to be stuck in your head for the rest of the day.
And I'm glad we're ending on it because all of you need to get this stuck in your heads forever.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm excited. I'm glad I picked the earworm.
Oh my God, you did.
All right, Lynx, it's your turn. Last one.
All right, so my last one is also not a male muse. It's a female, or sorry, it's not a female muse. It's a male muse.
Mm-hmm.
There is a female in this story, though, that is completely awesome. I want to take a moment to shout out her, but we'll go from the beginning. So in February of 1994, Soundgarden released their first single, Spoon Man, off their fourth studio album, Super Unknown. Okay. I don't know about you guys, but I fucking loved this album growing up. It was a huge thing in my life.
I think Soundgarden, period, even if you weren't a Soundgarden fan, Soundgarden is somehow part of your childhood if you are a 30 something
yeah.
at this point.
It was absolutely big in my brother's repertoire, so I just knew it by yeah. proxy.
Yeah, and they had great videos and everything, so yeah, yeah, they were definitely part of the culture whether you were into them or not.
Right. Super prolific.
So Spoon Man had actually been written 3 years earlier for the film Singles, by Cameron Crowe, who did Almost Famous, of course.
I feel like everybody was on the soundtrack to Singles, or should was supposed to be on the soundtrack to Singles.
Is Singles the one where the guy is so money he doesn't even know that he's money?
That's like all of dudes in the 90s.
Is that the one with Ben Stiller and Winona Ryder?
That's Reality Bites.
Oh. Singles is the one that takes place in the Seattle grunge scene.
Yes.
And there's members of Soundgarden in it, Alice in Chains, Pearl Jam, as well as people like Kira Sedgwick.
Was Matt Dillon in it?
Matt Dillon, you got
it. Okay, figured it out. Nailed it.
It's so good. If you haven't seen it, you must.
Swingers.
Oh, that's it.
That's right.
Sorry. Yeah,
that's close.
So close, though. It's easy to mix them all up.
It is. So, as I said, Soundgarden, Pearl Jam, they were characters in this film.
Mm-hmm.
And Jeff Ament from Pearl Jam was tasked with creating a fake band name for the film and created this list of potential names. I don't know if you guys remember the fake band in the movie and what their name was.
I do not remember the movie like at all.
I'm so excited that I get to say it then, because Matt Dillon's character is the lead singer in a band and he's with like Pearl Jam and Soundgarden. And the band name they chose was Citizen Dick.
That's right. Oh my God.
Stop.
Citizen. Right?
So fitting.
So good. So there was a list of other potential names, and one of them was Spoon Man.
Oh.
And Chris Cornell decided to use this list of potential band names to create some songs for the film.
That's interesting. So,
right?
That's really cute, actually.
The song doesn't feature in the film's soundtrack, but it is on the reissue that happened recently. But an early, rough, I think acoustic version can be heard during one of the scenes in the film. It was just like a rough sketch when the film was made. So obviously Chris and the rest of the band really liked the song, and they decided to move forward with creating an electric version for their album.
Okay.
And Spoon Man is a real life person. I don't think he had met him at the time that they were filming the movie, but he did after. And I'm going to tell you a little bit about the real Spoon Man.
Okay.
So he was originally born Roger Leroy Wenzel, but he was professionally known as Artis the Spoon Man.
Wow.
He was born in 1948 in Alaska, but he made a name for himself as an artist as a street performer in Seattle. He was active in the performance scene since 1972. Before that, he served in the Navy during the Vietnam War. Soundgarden wasn't the first band to become enamored with artists. Amazing spoon gifts.
Take a drink every time Link says spoon
or right.
Spoon Man.
I'm gonna try to put that in even more now.
Oh my God.
So the Spoon Man's drink. First collaboration was with Frank Zappa, actually, in 1981.
Oh, yeah. Shit.
Right. He asked him to appear on stage for a few shows, and he had already toured all over the world before Soundgarden came into his life. Everywhere, Asia, Australia, Europe, all over.
Damn.
And he even appeared on David Letterman. So he was already famous. It's not like he got famous because of this song.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
So Artis and Chris first crossed paths in 1992 when they asked the Spoon Man to perform between sets for Soundgarden and the Melvins.
Okay.
Oh my God, would I have loved to have been at that show.
I was like, that's a fucking show.
Yeah.
Right?
This is so grunge. I love it.
So the idea for the song had already been formed, and Soundgarden's manager, her name was Susan Silver. She's the woman that I want to mention here because she was also Chris's first wife. They were married from 1990 to 2004. They had a daughter, and she also helped bands like Alice in Chains. All of the grunge people really loved and respected her. Mm-hmm. I really should do like a whole episode on her one day because she is badass and she really helped their career.
Yeah, she sounds like she had a hand in just about everybody in the grunge scene, which wouldn't you know it, without a woman,
exactly,
the movement wouldn't have happened.
Yeah. And all the people that are still around in grunge, give her like crazy respect. Like anytime you hear a quote about her, they're all just praising her. So she
that's good. I mean, at least they are giving her the accolades that she should have.
Absolutely.
At least when she's mentioned, they are like, yes, this lady.
Exactly. And so she went up to Artis and said, hey, Soundgarden wrote this song about you. Would you like to participate in it? And of course, he was like, yeah, sure. So that would take about a year and a half before they actually laid it down and brought him in, though. Mm-hmm. And Artis says that he got a flat fee of $1,000 for his part. He plays the spoons.
Mm-hmm. Oh, nice.
Spoon man.
I thought he played the drums. So this is like completely different than when I thought.
Didn't expect this right turn.
Yeah, total 90 degrees here.
Because it was a single, they also asked him to be in the music video.
I do remember him in the music video.
Yes. He got paid $7,000 for that, he said. So I guess like $8,000 for the whole experience.
Nice.
One thing I really liked about the song or the music video is that Chris Cornell repeats multiple times, save me in the song. Mm-hmm. And he showed up. Artist showed up wearing a shirt that said save yourself, and you can see
that's good.
Let's play a little bit of it.
Okay. Yeah.
There you go. Yo, that's a sweet spoon solo, though. Can we talk about the spoon solo?
He's really good at spoons.
Yo, spoons are hard.
Is that going to be the title of this episode? Can we talk about the spoon?
Spoon solo?
Also, if you didn't take multiple sips, well, he said spoon. All of them.
Every single one. You lost the drinking game. Yes. Excuse me, which apparently people hate that we do, but you know what? Fucking doing it.
It's the last song of the night.
Yeah.
You gotta do it.
Come on, guys. You don't know where the night's gonna go. You gotta get yourself a little bit ready, a little liquid ready for that.
That's true. It's either the last song of the night or the first song of the night.
Mm. I mean, you never know what the first
drinking song of the night.
Drinking's not your thing. You do what you gotta do to get yourself ready for the rest of the night.
Exactly.
If it's jamming out to Spoon Man, we salute you.
If it's playing the fucking spoons, good for you.
Exactly. If you become the Spoon Man by the end of the night, that's a good night.
I'd say you won.
Yeah, you won the night.
So Chris has stated this song was, and I'm quoting here, about the paradox of who he is and what people perceive him as. He's a street musician, but when he's playing on the street, he is given a value and judged completely wrong by someone else. They think he's a street person, or he's doing this because he can't hold down a regular job. They put him down a few pegs on the social ladder because of how they perceive someone who dresses differently, acts differently.
Or he's just playing Eagles covers and he doesn't give a shit. He just wants money.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And yeah, Cornell said the lyrics expressed the sentiment that he much more easily identified with someone like artists than he would someone, I guess, watching type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And in 2014, I thought this quote was really funny because this part's nice. He says that artist is an inspiration, but then he goes on to say, I've sold millions of records and toured the world, but I can't do what he can. I can't just walk into a room and pick up an instrument and perform and entertain everyone and their jaws drop. I'm like, Chris, that's exactly what you do.
You can 100% do that all the time.
Like, what? I can't just open my mouth and sing like a fucking angel and everyone's just in awe.
Yeah, not at all. Like, but like,
you just cover Billie Jean and just like make it better than the original.
That like just gives you so much insight into how Chris Cornell thought of himself.
I know.
Like, leading up to his suicide, and that makes it so sad. It
does. Like, the imposter syndrome is still real.
Yeah, because it's like if you could just like shake him and be like, no, that's exactly what you do every time you get on stage, then maybe he could have been saved. But I mean, it's so much more complicated.
It's so
than
complicated.
That. So, yeah. Man, oh, that's like.
It's a little heartbreaking.
Yeah.
You're like, but that's like what
you can do that. Chris Cornell, and you have.
I know, he's like amazing. And yeah. Artis is also amazing. He has shared the stage with many other musicians, including Pete Seeger, Aerosmith, Katie Lang, Fish, Annie DeFranco. Yeah, he's been all over the place.
Holy shit.
That is a range.
That is very range.
Yeah. And for those who
could be so prolific.
For those who don't know, the song was released. It reached number 3 on the Billboard Mainstream Rock, and it actually won a Grammy for Best Metal Performance in 1995.
Really?
Yeah.
I'm not
this
surprised.
Is what artists had to say. He said, "There's nothing ever to regret about Spoon Man. That is unusually incredible, remarkable. Elvis didn't have a Grammy award-winning song featuring him about him. Nobody did. Nobody at all. There isn't anybody. So it's a huge honor what's happened to me."
That's very sweet.
I love that.
Guys, yeah. I feel like this episode should win some kind of award.
I agree.
I don't know if it's the 3 Advil or the 2 tall cans of the back.
Oh, girl went to 2 tall boys.
Girl's having a good time today.
I hope you feel so good right now, Shanti. You had a shitty night.
I'm still in pain, but I hope that this episode wins some kind of award.
Yeah. You know what helps with pain though? Spilling the tea on Steely Dan and the Eagles.
And having heartwarming stories about Spoon Man. Getting to hear like little details on a bunch of other songs. Like, God. Yeah.
Yeah.
This is great, guys.
This whole awesome. Episode Thank is a muse.
Yeah. I can't wait. I can't wait for the person to be like, oh, I wrote this wonderful Grammy award winning song after I heard this episode of a podcast with these wonderful amazing, women run podcasters.
These amazing non-screechy ladies that I love so much.
And the Grammy award for best musical podcast hosted by 4 screechy ladies goes to
us. Yay. Oh and my God. I didn't even prepare a speech.
I'm actually amazed no one has ever written a review that just says they are amusing.
Well, now you have a free review. So whoever is listening to this, please go post that.
Oh my gosh. No, thank you ladies so much for being on our show. This was so much fun and such a long time coming. Mm-hmm. And I don't know why we haven't done it before.
Yeah, mm-hmm. But also
absolutely. You know,
having you guys on.
Yeah,
and honestly, what a perfect kind of episode to have you guys on for.
Seriously,
so.
This was so much fun. Why don't you guys pimp out where your stuff comes from? Tell people where they can find you. I don't know. You guys made me fucking drink like every time I heard Spoon Man. What do you expect from me?
Drink.
All right, Spoon Ladies, you can find us at Muses Podcast on Instagram. We're on all of your preferred streaming platforms, I think.
Including TikTok.
Yeah, we're Lynx is definitely on TikTok. She is the mastermind behind TikTok. We have a website, it's musespod.com. You can buy our merch there. You can listen to our episodes there. You can read some of our blog posts there.
All that good stuff.
It.
Yeah. No, but like, yeah, you guys have a lot of stuff. There's so much content.
Patreon, we got merch, we got Twitter, we got TikTok.
And hopefully we will all be on Twitch soon. Because Shanti has masterminded that.
Yeah.
I'm ready. I am ready.
All of us plebes how to use it.
If you are interested in hearing us get drunk together.
Well, again?
Criticizing people.
Again?
And really railing on Adam Duritz.
Yeah.
You know?
Stupid dreads.
Fucking dreaded idiot. Yeah. I'm sorry. That's harsh, but.
I don't think it's that harsh.
It's not that harsh.
It could be really way worse.
I mean, that's what he is. So
It's truth. I'm sorry. It's just truth.
Yep. I'm done.
Okay.
I'm done.
And you can find our shit wherever you've already found our shit.
Yeah,
same. We're on all your platforms. Visit rockcandypodcast.com. You can follow our social medias. We got Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter.
Yep.
And also, you could pay for our content.
If yeah, you can go to Patreon and pay for our shit and get bonus stuff. What is that? Oh, you have your pin, our pin on your board.
It's a vision board. You can call it what it is.
It's a vision board. I love it.
Nice.
Yeah.
She's been envisioning this moment for quite some time.
Be like Shanti and get some cute pins and stuff to put on your vision board at our merch store on TeePublic, or you can become a patron on patreon.com/rockcandypodcast. Give me a chance to say it.
I'm
okay.
Helping. Guys, it's been a long day. It's only two.
Only 2 o'clock.
Well, it's 3 o'clock.
No, it's 3 o'clock now. But anyway, yeah, you can be a patron on patreon.com/rockcandypodcast. You can give us some money every month and we will give you content and swag in return.
Yes. Yes, we will. And anyway, thank you all so much for listening. We love you and appreciate you. And until next week, party on, everybody.
Party on, ladies.
Yay. And party on, you crazy kids out there. Spoon Man! Get stuff
drink.
Drink. Spoon Man!
Guys, that was so much fun.
'Hello, dear stranger. I'd like to introduce you to something new, or perhaps something very, very old. The Heresies of Radolf Burntwine is a horror fantasy medical mystery following the titular monk turned traveling medical investigator. Follow Radolf as he navigates a nightmare world in which viruses are gods and the human race are not their favored children. Steeped in history and an aesthetic that can only be described as a combination of occult academia and laboratory Judaica, the Heresies of Radolf Burntwine have been described as Umberto Eco meets H.P. Lovecraft. For more information, check out the Patreon at thorb.info. But take care, dear stranger, for some truths are best left unknown.